May 28th, 1606. The chariots grinding upon Corbel Street hush out the murmurs of murder whilst the hawking seagulls glide from the timber on tension as it spreads through the air. Two men, both unlike in dignity, are about to clash swords. What reasons be at hand for such an illegal act? This question echoes through Via Pallacorda, our arena. The rules are clear. The duel must be accepted by both sides in order to proceed. Should any woman or priest interfere, you must halt. And lastly, if the enemy falls, out of respect, you make the sign of the cross where he fell in blood red. Both men look over their shoulders to signal the handful of soldiers. No one is to interfere, unless it gets out of hand, of course. The blades are out, reflecting off the waxing crescent which acts as a backdrop. A gentlemanly salute is given. They are about to begin. On one side we have Ranuccio Tomassoni, a Roman protettore, or in less fancy terms, a pimp. And on the other side we have Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio, a painter extraordinaire. Ready to claw at each other to regain their honour, they start the dance. Swords clash in haste, sparks fly out as strength meets steel. The battle can only get too tiring too fast. How much longer till one gives in? Not much. An opening is found. The better swordsman fills the gap and lunges forward, aiming towards the groin, clearly trying to send a message. But he misses by a hairline. The tip of his blade cuts straight into the femoral artery as the victim falls. His brothers, they erupt in defense for their fallen one, and a brawl between two gangs ensues. The Tomassonis are one man down. Merisi is victor. Caravaggio is on the run. Rome is no home anymore. The Pope has issued a bando capitale. There is a price on his head. On horse, he rides to the forest, under the care and the protection of the Sforza Colonnas. But soon the fresh mountain air and soft cottage smiles turn into chaotic chants from drunkards and piercing stares from the Camorra. Napoli is well out of the jurisdiction of the Pope, but God watches still. His disciples, the Knights of St. John, watch Michelangelo closely. Who are these black-dressed devotees? They come from an island in the middle of the Mediterranean, heroes of the Great Siege. Their name echoes in triumph all over Europe. Can he join? There are churches in Malta, right? Perhaps a little too much. Yet, most remain as blank as the flags of surrender. He can hide there for a while, start a new life. Knighthood would be nice. After all, his childhood friend Fabrizio Sforza Colonna, the son of his most loyal of saviors, he too had sins and was reborn as a knight. And look at him now. The captain of the galleys. Perhaps this could work. But first, Caravaggio needs to finish off his latest commission. A megalithic feat depicting the seven acts of mercy. Not as usually depicted, separated, but together in a massive painting. All for the high altar of the Piemonte della Misericordia. The instructions are crystal clear. As for the acts of mercy, feed the hungry and visit the sick. Clothe the naked and visit the imprisoned. Shelter the homeless and give drink to the thirsty. And lastly, bury the dead. Bury the dead. How many of these acts has this murderer on the run done? Possibly none. But his recent mindset, sorrowful emotions, make heavy the heart which survived. Which is why the message needs to be all the more honest and direct. The staging is set. The actors are on stage. All he needs to do is adjust the light. Friends, Romans, countrymen, welcome to another episode of Caro Caravaggio, here with your host Jeremy Greg on Campus 103.7. Today we started off with a bang, an episode that I have been dreaming about for a very, very long time, ever since we started this series, because today we are going to be talking about the seven acts of mercy. A painting that I had seen just recently, actually, in my last trip I managed to go over to Naples. Naples was a fantastic experience. And we went over to check out the Caravaggio, which was beyond expectations. Anything that I had ever thought of was definitely seen right over there. And oh my, if you do ever get the chance to go to Naples, go there for the food and obviously stick around for the Caravaggio. So, my lovely listeners, buckle up and get ready for today's episode as we delve into the mind of a criminal on the run. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for Caro Caravaggio. That song was there to put you into the theme of today. Definitely a familiar tune with most of the listeners over here. And what are we going to be talking about? Again, Caro Caravaggio, the aim of this program is to dive deep into the works, the artworks of Michelangelo Merisi himself, one of Europe's most sought-after artists, and at this point, also one of Europe's most wanted. After he kills Ranuccio Tomassoni, the Pope literally issues out a manhunt for the man, and so he has to run away from the Papal States, and that is when he ends up in Naples, a city which was literally filled up with Knights of Saint John, especially due to our connections and our history, which we will be talking a little bit more about in the next episode as we start to approach the end. Anyway, my good friends, let's dive into today's painting, The Seven Acts of Mercy, which was finished right around 1607, just a couple of months before he comes to the islands of Malta. It is an oil on canvas standing at 390 centimeters in length and 260 centimeters in width and can be found in Naples at the Chiesa del Piemonte della Misericordia. And what do we see over here? At this point, Caravaggio, a man on the run, is troubled. Everything is going on at an extremely fast rate from the mountains. He's now ended up in Naples. He's going as far away from Rome as he can, but truly all his work lies over there. Everyone knows him over there, but now he needs to stay low. And when we look at this painting, in my opinion, this here is the chaos going through the artist's mind. Instead of doing 7 separate acts, he puts it all into one. This painting is chaotic. This painting is all over the place when you look at it. However, the depictions are marvelous. So, what do we see over here? Let's take a look at the painting and start from the very, very top. Right over there, we see first characters. A lady holding a child. The lady's face is completely lit up by the traditional light coming in from the left. These two characters stand above two angels that seem to be holding each other, and thus with their wings wide open. These two angels are young, bare-chested, curly hair, and they both look at each other. The angel on the left has his arms wide open, whilst the angel on the right holds his brother dear. The angel on the left, his wings are grey, not as brightly lit, but behind it you can notice a piece of drapery, this time not in red as we usually see, but we are seeing this satin dirty white. On the right, the angel holding his brother has his wings wide open, and there we can see the detail of every feather as it heads out of the painting to the top and now starts to also put a big shadow on a wall that can be seen on the third quarter on the right. We continue heading down, following the light and down the motion of the angels, and we see a central area which is almost completely left in darkness. A piece of drapery still falls from behind the right angel and goes down to reveal more of the area below in the painting. A light is shown, a candle is held by a man that is illuminating another figure lifting up a pair of legs. A body here is being carried. This is a little off-center to the right. Approaching then far right, we find a beautiful lady, fully lit up, and she is feeding a prisoner from her breasts. She wears a white tunic, and over it we have a dark brown shirt. She lowers her left chest onto the mouth of an old man who is drinking. This is one of the 7 acts. Visit the prisoners, and in addition to it, feed the hungry. Then we move on to the left-hand side of the painting. There we see a very well-dressed man. His clothes are superior than all of his brothers. He wears a big hat with a giant feather, a white feather. He looks downwards onto the next man's beard. His beard, just like Albrecht Dürer, is sharp. His nose is fully illuminated, but his eyes are covered in shade. But now, revealing another character out of the darkness, we have a man with his tunic slightly coming off from his right shoulder as he raises his hand with a vessel and he drinks water. Underneath this man, almost receiving the drops from the thirsty man, we find a person dressed in black. His hair is short, dark brown. His eyes are also in the shade, but his right and top part of his face is illuminated along with his right ear. He points, very similar to what we had seen in the calling of Saint Matthew, as if referring to me. And then darkness appears again underneath this man, to reveal the most brightly lit back in this painting. A man without technically a face, because all we see is the back of his head, as he is on the ground, fully collapsed, trying to stand up. He wears no shirts, but we can see a cloth around his waist. This man is poverty. With all of the characters coming into this painting, I wanted to debate something that once I read in one of the many Caravaggio books that I own. And when it comes to this interpretation, One author mentioned that perhaps Caravaggio wasn't going through a lot of pain and turmoil because he would be able to execute such masterpieces. But then again, I wanted to debate this. Now again, I am no authority on Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio, but I am a big, big fan and a big, big follower. And as an artist as well, I think this painting literally captures the whole entire chaos that Caravaggio was found in. His mind, this man that is running away from Rome, going away from all that he loves, all the people that he knows, from Philippe Melandroni, from his friends, this is going to be a big, big step in his life. How will he be after it? Does he have any security that the Knights of St. John are going to take him on? There is none of that yet. However, he still gets commissions. He still appreciates his value as an artist, and does he disappoint? No, he does not. This is a magnificent work of art, full of the artist's chaos. And with all of these characters in view, the crowding, the levels, the expressions, I beg to ask you once again, how deep does his guilt run? Or was he even not affected by it? What was going through his mind?
And we
are back for the last part of Caro Caravaggio, episode 9, where we had just discussed the seven acts of mercy, which can be found in Naples. If you have ever seen this painting, please get in touch. Let us know what you think about it. But before we close off this episode with our final track, we talked a lot about how the duel actually happened and how it took place, but we never truly discussed why it happened. When it comes to the duel between Ranuccio Tommasoni and Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio, there are certain theories that most likely it would have been over one of their women. Now, had it been Philide Melandroni or any other courtesan, or perhaps even the wife of Ranuccio Tommasoni, due to a court case going on a little bit after his death, it's not truly certain. We are talking about a fight that took place in 1606. But what we do know is this. Most likely, Michelangelo was using these ladies as his models, and there was a lot of tension. What we do know for sure is a lady was involved due to how Caravaggio went for his closing kill. When it comes to the, let's say, mafia of the day, back then, if you get a facial scar, a sfregio, as they would call it, that would mean that you've offended a male member of their family, of their group, their closest compatriots. However, if you offend a lady, that usually results in castration. So perhaps Caravaggio here wasn't truly going for the final kill, but instead he wanted to send a message. A message that did not come across as very clear, but credit where credit is due. It's also a very specific area that he had to target. So let's give the guy some slack. With that, Caravaggio had to escape. Another puzzle now comes in. I want to share with you again my thoughts on this, because if you ever go to Rome and you find Via Pallacorda, nowadays the area where the fight took place is a car park, but two streets behind it is the residence of Caravaggio. You can go over there, you can leave your luggage as well. Apparently this is what is left of his legacy. And from that point onwards, you can truly see how close in proximity these two areas were. So, with the team of the Tommasonis behind him, would he have gone home? Who knew where Caravaggio lived? I'm pretty sure, as a very well-known man, this was a common address. But these are all the questions that usually run through my mind. But now we close off this episode by introducing next week's episode. We are on episode 10, and finally we arrive on the islands of Malta, where we will be talking very passionately about the famous beheading of Saint John the Baptist. As Michelangelo now leaves his life of crime behind, dons on the habit, and officially becomes a knight of Saint John. My dear friends, that is the dream. See you next week.
Gazing through the window at the world outside, wondering will Mother Earth survive, hoping that mankind will stop abusing her sometime. After all, there's only just the two of us, we'll be right back. I'm just a dream.